Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Yo paticca samuppadaṃ passati so dhammaṃ passati yo dhammaṃ passati so paticca samuppadaṃ passati ti. So those of you who know Pali, don't be worried. I'm not going to give a talk on dependent origination this evening, because that's what that beginning saying was, that the one who sees the dependent origination sees the Dhamma. The one who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. But I wanted just to point out that in this part of the retreat, that when one starts developing insight to understand the cause and effect process of the Dhamma, to see just why things happen, and if you understand sort of the whole process of cause and effect, it solves a lot of problems. And it also brings into play the emphasis on meditation during this retreat, especially the emphasis on the deep meditations, and that famous saying, Dhammapada 374, always chant and use of the four lines, but the first line is Nati Jhana Apanyasa. There is no jhana for those without wisdom. And so it does need an understanding of wisdom to allow the mind to be still. In that sense, in that statement there, the deep meditations rely on a very powerful understanding on the nature of cause and effect. And if one has that understanding through the insight practices which one develops during the retreat, because it's not just for the practice of developing jhanas or samatha, it's also for the understanding of what happens on the way in there, what the blockages are, what the difficulties and problems are, and overcoming those difficulties and problems, not with willpower, but with wisdom power, through contemplating and finding out why these things happen. And when one develops the understanding of like the Dhamma, you know you've understood the Dhamma, not if you can give a good talk or if you can write a book. You know you can understand the Dhamma if you can live in a community like this in peace and harmony, not worrying about what other people say or other people do. You know that you can live in peace and harmony, you know you understand the Dhamma when you have few possessions in your room. You know you've understood the Dhamma when you can live peacefully amidst difficulty. You know you understand the Dhamma when you have compassion and forgiveness and letting go to people who hurt you or harm you or say cruel things to you. This is like the wisdom practices. And you read the suttas and it's very, very clear just what we should do as monks and what our training is. And we look at those suttas and we look at the examples we have and we think, wow, those people must have been born like that, or the time of the Buddha was some sort of golden age where people were just started, they were born just with these enormous paramitas, spiritual qualities, and these days we just can't do it, and that's wrong. There's no such thing as a person who is born with such qualities which cannot be developed in this life. This is a cause and effect process, and each one of you is capable of taking that process to its very end of nibbana. But one has to understand why, to reflect. And to be able to reflect, we have to get rid of a lot of delusory thoughts. They're thinking the idea of a self, a me or a mine. And one of those things which we have to be careful of is just what happens when we judge people or judge ourselves or we judge anything at all. Because as soon as you judge something and put it in a box, you're completely forgetting about the teaching of anicca, that things change. And this thing we call a person, these five khandhas, is always in flux. And as soon as one sort of puts a label on somebody of being my friend or being my enemy, of being the angry monk or being the loving monk, or being the schizophrenic, or being the obsessive, or whatever else is a label which we put onto people. Be careful, because by making such a label, by judging a person, or by judging yourself, you are going completely against the Dhamma which was taught by the Buddha. There's no such thing as a person who is fixed by any such labels. You should be able to know from your own mindfulness of your states of mind that each one of us goes through the whole range of personality types, maybe even in a day, certainly in a year. And which one is the real you? One of the points I'm trying to make here is if you look at yourself and look at another person and put a label on them, and whatever that label is, whether it's friend or enemy, whether it's gentle or animal, whatever label you put on a person, you are causing the problem. You are making that perception. And if you look on a person as an enemy, that's what you will see. What you look for, you find. You don't need to look in a psychology book to understand this. This is the insight which comes up with your reflective mind living in solitude, living in a simple place, where because you are developing enough stillness, the mind wakes up and sees the causes and effects of why we get into anger, why we get frustrated, why we get restless, and most importantly, why we become free. If you want to be in a prison, you should understand that no one else makes those prison walls, only yourself. Just through delusion. As the first couplet of dependent origination says, avijja paccaya sankhara, is from delusion that we create these formations, especially these mental formations, which regards our friends in the monastic life, which regards the people who visit this monastery, even regards our self in a certain way out of delusion. This is what we mean by the karma formations. We are making these things. We make our world, and we make our happiness, suffering, or the freedom from it. It's because of this that whatever happens to you in monastic life or out there in the world, you have no right to blame anybody else. You all know the Ajahn Chah's saying, and it's well known by each one of you, but sometimes we forget it. Anyone who blames somebody else is like a person who has an itch on their head and they scratch their bum. And that's what Ajahn Chah used to say again and again. So if you're having any suffering, any pain, any difficulty, whatever it is, it's not somebody else's fault. If you think like that, then the path is closed to you. There's no possibility of growth. Because in any community, in any place, things will never be absolutely perfect. And you'll find there's always something to blame. Which is why, if you even read in the time of the Buddha, there were people who would even complain that the Buddha never showed them any psychic powers or magical events. They would blame the Buddha for the fact they got bored in their monastic life. If you really want to, you can blame me as well. All the years you've been here, you've never seen me do any psychic phenomena. Or you can blame sort of the monastery for being too comfortable, or you can blame somebody else for... It's very easy to put fault on other persons. But you should know just through the insight practices that that is not addressing the problem. And you can run throughout your whole life blaming others. And many of you have done that. Now is the time to stop. And it's no one else's fault. Because it's our delusion just creates these categories, creates these judgments, creates the sankharas which create our world. If you are going to judge anybody, it's always good to judge them, giving them the benefit of the doubt. And stretch it so much the benefit just is almost bent backwards, bent double. Who cares? If you're going to judge at all, it's better for you and also for the community to judge with metta, with loving kindness. If anyone does something wrong, if anyone does something unskillful, uncaring, remember that old story which I keep telling the lay people about the crazy person in the market where the husband goes to buy eggs and always abuses him because he had an accident when he was young. He's brain damaged. If anyone misbehaves in this monastery, there must be temporary insanity. So be kind to them. Never anger. And as for you, you don't need to carry it around. Even in the world, to our lay people, we tell them it doesn't matter if anyone has abused you, to let it go. That's straight from the Dhammapada. And the Buddha said, he abused me, he beat me, he defeated me. In a person who harbors such faults, such thoughts, the problem never goes away. He beat me, he abused me, he cheated me. And those who don't harbor such thoughts, they don't keep them, the problem is solved. And these are timeless teachings coming from the Buddha, simple teachings. But unless we remember them, we create problems for ourselves and others. We need insight practice to actually to go along with our meditation practice. Otherwise, the path is closed to us. It's because of delusion we put things in boxes. And we keep those boxes as solid realities, not understanding that things change. Which is why that I find it difficult as a monk over so many years to judge anybody in this monastery. And you can understand just the way I relate to each one of you. It's so hard to actually to put you in a box and judge you and assess you. But stupid people, people still stuck with delusion, we do judge one another. Come on, get real. It's hard enough to judge yourself and to know what you're doing. How many of you here have got enough mindfulness, enough penetration to know who you are and what you are and how you work that you really sussed yourself out yet? When you come down to it, only a stream winner knows what they are. But nevertheless, it's the ordinary people in the world, the Putujanas. They don't even know who they themselves are, but they sure know what other people are. And they judge other people, and they keep those judgments, those thoughts, as solid realities, never allowing them to change and to morph. And because of that, they create bad karma for themselves and bad karma and suffering for others. There's no need to do that. So, a wise person who knows cause and effect, who has some insight, knows that it's impossible to judge another person. It's impossible to know them and to understand why we do these things and what the purpose was. Which is why if it is anyone in this monastery who should be a judge, it should be me as the abbot and teacher. But all of you who have come to talk with me, who have come to ask questions, how many times have I judged you? You don't do that at all. And it's not because I'm soft. It's because of wisdom, of insight. It's a deep understanding, which means I just cannot do that. It's impossible. And because of that, you can see that there is a friendliness coming from non-judging. There's a sense of harmony, of literally live and let live. When anyone sort of abuses, we take that as a wonderful practice. Of Ajahn Chah, we'd always used to say Ajahn Mosquito. Mosquitoes were hard to bear in those early days in Thailand. With no mosquito repellent, no fly screens, nothing but just to let these insects eat you. And whenever you would complain, he would always say, these are your teachers, Ajahn, Mosquito. And anyone who gives you a hard time. They are your teacher. Even for those of you who came to the Fourth Global Conference, you would have remembered just a session on the Bodhisattva or the Arahat. And the Vietnamese nun, Sister Huy Can, gave a very beautiful and moving description of how, whether you believe Bodhisattvas or not, how you can make use of that concept. In other words, it can be a skillful tool. When she told the story of the daughter-in-law and her mother-in-law, and how the daughter-in-law regarded her abuser as a bodhisattva, and how that changed the relationship and solved the problem. How skillful that is. That's exactly the same as what Ajahn Chah would do, but using the Theravada framework, not of bodhisattvas, but teachers. And that's not just with other people. This is also with the situations we face even in our physical body. There are times when each one of us gets sick, whether it's with constipation, or whether it's diarrhea, whether it's backache, whether it's just simple old age, arthritis, or whatever else it is, heat or cold, or even hay fever, which is the season coming up now for me. Each one of these sicknesses, we don't judge. It's part of having a body. It's part of life. I've never seen one person, never seen one in my life anyway, who's never had a sickness. And so when we understand and accept these things, we think, our body beat me, abused me, cheated me. Anyone who gets angry at the body for that, the problem never is solved. I'm just adapting the Dharma part of us. But instead we look upon our body as the Bodhisattva. That's a joke. We look upon it as our teacher. We look upon it as just a way that we can learn. We can learn to endure, but not just to endure for endurance sake, just to pull up with things, but to learn from these things. And what you should be able to learn from this body is that when you try and control it and make it this way and that way, it just makes things worse. You tense up around the pain. But when you do whatever you can, and then you leave it alone, you let it go, you don't try and control it, then you find that 99% of the physical problem disappears. It's the controlling and getting involved with it which causes the problems. It's the same way with any problems in the monastery. When we get involved in trying to manipulate and change it to our purposes, where the problem gets worse. So we learn just to leave things be, to let them go. And we understand they're not always going to be like this. Sicknesses, they come and they go, sometimes miraculously. It seems to be that many sicknesses, diseases or whatever, there's so much karma involved in that. Because in my years as a monk, I've seen this so often, that people have these sicknesses and send them to this doctor and this medicine and that medicine. It never seems to cure. And then someday there's some magic medicine and they do something different and then they're okay. And it's not that they've finally found the magic medicine. To me, it's just the karma has been used up. Whatever caused that, in the past, sometime, the karma is gone. And now they're free. It's a great thing to look upon the law of karma that way, because karma is cause and effect. If you're having a hard time, someone's abusing you, you deserve it. It's not someone else's fault. It must be payback from something you've done in the past. Again, that's why we don't blame. We take it on the chin. We allow it to be. We learn from it. And then it goes very quickly. Just like the pains in the body. Same as the frustrations in the meditation. We look upon the difficulties, obstacles. And for those of you who have talked about your obstacles in meditation during the interviews, you know that too, I say these are learning experiences. You know, this is the shit which you tread in, which you dig under your mango tree to get the beautiful sweet mangoes afterwards. So nothing is rejected. Everything gets embraced and made use of. Which is why we thank our tormentors. We thank the mosquitoes. We thank the pain in our bodies. We thank the sicknesses and the stiffness and the old age. Because they're teaching us all the time. We even thank the obstacles in our meditation. So whatever it is we have to face while we're trying to move on the path towards Nibbana, each one of them is just teaching us. And you all know the old saying that if you don't learn the lesson, you have to repeat it. And so we learn from these experiences. We don't get negative and judge them. This is bad. This shouldn't happen. Why am I sick? Why am I restless? Why am I full of all these fantasies? Why can't I sit? We learn from each one of these problems. We understand the cause and the effect and how to be free. Learning is paramount. You don't learn if you run away from class, if you reject the lesson, or you blame the teacher. So by accepting and understanding, there's more chance that we can grow. In other words, we focus on one of the first factors, or the first factor of dependent origination, avijja, delusion, misunderstanding. Because that delusion, blinded by ignorance or blinded by delusion, we have all this craving, this controlling, which is the fuel for rebirth. And sometimes, our life can be so painful and difficult. Even in a beautiful monastery, we can still have problems. Let alone out there in the big bad world. Even in sort of the best fed monastery, probably, I don't know, and maybe in the world, I don't know. But even so, we can still get stomach aches. No matter what you do, just how you arrange it, things always tend to have problems. The delusion is to think that we can somehow get rid of those problems. And sometimes we just spend hours thinking of ways to overcome the problems without realizing that thinking itself is the problem. Because the thinking is the mental formation which creates our world. As I said at the beginning, if you are going to use thought, at least give it the benefit of the doubt and judge positively. By judging positively, it means, thank you for causing me trouble. You're teaching me something. Thank you for hurting body. You're teaching me just what this human life is all about. Old age, sickness and death. When the mind is restless, thank you, mind, for being restless. You're teaching me just now what restless feels like, the pain of it. Thank you, mind. You're teaching me that I can't control you. When you understand all these things, if you're going to judge at all, you judge in a positive way. You can understand that judging in a positive way is encouraging the mind. When you encourage the mind with that positive thought, you find you have more energy. The mind tends to fall towards positive rather than fault-finding. The mind does have the energy to be still. It solves the problems. It gives you peace. It gives you freedom. They say you create prisons or you create freedom. It's not the monastery is a freedom. People can make a prison, can make a hell out of this monastery. And they can make freedom out of a external hell. It really depends upon one's attitude. And this is why you don't have to change other people or what they do or what they say. You don't even have to change your body. It's the attitude towards it is the key to liberation. It's the attitude to the mind is the key to peace. It's the attitude to whatever you have to face every moment while you've got your eyes closed, which is the key to developing jhanas. And it's the attitude to the khandhas, which is the key to liberation called nibbana. If you can only understand that, you understand that it's the judging and the firm saying this is good and this is bad which causes the problems in life. One of my favorite meditation techniques is to sit down without judging. When I first taught this, I think I first mentioned this when I was visiting Thailand many years ago at Wat Nanachat, and when I gave a little talk on non-judging. One of the monks there, he was quite surprised because he thought I was very, very, very Theravada, said, "Oh, that's Ajahn Brahm's third Zen patriarch speech. Where, you know, the third Zen patriarch is a very, very famous teaching. We said, the path is easy for those who make no preferences." And there's a lot of truth about that. When you make no preferences for who you like and who you don't like, you make no preferences for having a healthy body or a sick body. You make no preferences for being hot, being cold. You make no preferences for what's happening to you in your mind when you're meditating. Try it. But if you do, it has to be 100%. What happens? You're looking at the meditation. What is a preference anyway? It's a judging. A judging based upon some illusion of the past. What you think is good meditation, what you think is bad meditation. Too many people in this monastery are aiming for jhana and haven't got a clue what jhana is. And as Ajahn Chah kept on saying, what they're really aiming for is a tortoise with a moustache. They just don't know what they're aiming for, but they're aiming for it anyway. And of course, that's why they never get anywhere. They don't know what they're looking for, they're like some crazy person. And that's the cause of much restlessness. So that's not what we're supposed to do. And try the non-judging. You don't know. If you truly don't judge, you have nothing to do. The non-judging mind undermines the doer. You don't know where to go. You can't go anywhere. You stay still. If you're not aiming for jhanas, you're not aiming for anything. You're not aiming for happiness. You're not aiming. There's a stillness develops and a patience. And it's a wonderful little technique based on insight, based on some very deep understanding on the nature of the mind. Because what happens is when you're meditating, we judge too often. It's not peaceful enough. I want to be more peaceful. It's too restless. And it's that judging which actually gives fuel to the mind. It makes it move. From that awija, that judging, we get the karma formations, the craving, the fuel, which keeps the mind going. It's the same process which at the end of your life will take you into a new life. If you judge, then you create a new birth. That's why years ago, when someone asked me, how can, in compassionate Buddhism, we can have like a hell? And especially that there's supposed to be Yama gods who send people to hell. These are supposed to be gods. They're supposed to be kind people, refined people. Even like high-minded people in this life wouldn't send people down to hell. So can't the Yama gods, you know, cut you a bit of slack? And say, well, you'd be really bad, but, you know, never mind. You know, you can go off to another realm if you like. It never really made any sense to me that how can this traditional idea in Buddhism of Yama gods judge you at the end of your life and send you down to hell realm? And of course, many of you know the answer, which is very close to modern psychology. It's the Yama gods don't send you down there. You send yourself down to hell. And you stay there as long as you think you need to be punished. You judge yourself. And this is a great insight to see just how, as human beings, we send ourselves to hell even in this monastery. Can we judge ourselves? And we judge other people. You have got no right to do that. That's complete illusion. And how some people even go on a retreat, and afterwards you judge yourself. Is good retreat or bad retreat? And just a retreat, that's all. Just the way it evolves. And in fact, the less you judge, the deeper you go. And what happens is sometimes you're meditating along there, and you're a bit restless, and you think, oh, this is a bad meditation, I can't meditate. You can see just how that judgment is actually creating this feeling of inability, this negativity, the lack of energy. You create the second half of your meditation by such thoughts. You also know that story which is in my Open the Door of Your Heart, of those Class A kids and the Class B kids. To find out the full story, if you don't know it, read that book. Class A kids, they became Class A kids, or the best kids, simply because they thought they were the best. And they became Class B kids because they believed in the judgment. That judging creates. Don't underestimate the power of the mind. If you think this is a bad meditation, it becomes a bad meditation. If you think it's a good meditation, it becomes a good meditation. That's all there is to it. So if you are going to judge, judge on the positive side. Give yourself the benefit of the doubt. But the best way of all is, doesn't matter how much has happened so far, you never carry the past into the present. You don't judge, because that's what judging does. It carries the past and influences the present. Just like those Class B kids carried the past of all those judgments and assessments, they carried it into the present, and they failed in the present. So all one needs to do is to let go of the history. Never carry what anybody said, what anybody did, what you said, did, thought, or whatever, into this present moment. Just as it said in the Bhaddhekarata Suttas, the past is gone, you don't visit it. The future, you don't run after it. Now is the only time you have. This is the only reality. Why defile this moment by your judgments of the past? And when you understand what the past is, we do see it through tinted glasses. We choose what we want to see. It's called vipalasas. The perversions. The bending of the truth to suit ourselves. And I see that happening all the time in this monastery. You see it happening in the world. The way that we bend through our perceptions, through our memory, the past, in one certain way. We choose and pick. And it's completely untrustworthy. It doesn't deserve to be taken into the present moment, because it has no real value. Understanding that allows you to let go of the past. Why am I going to burden myself with what happened a moment ago? That gives you freedom. How much time do we waste thinking of what happened of the past? How much freedom do we sacrifice? We've only got a certain amount of time to be liberated. Don't waste a moment with worrying or thinking about what happened in the past. Forgive, free, loving kindness, let go. That's what it meant by not having any preferences. Preferences are based on past experience. We completely let go, and the path is easy. Whether it's living in a monastery, whether it's living in a body, whether it's living with a mind, we can let go of the whole lot, and every moment we become free. It's so important when you're developing deep meditation to be able to let go of these things. Otherwise, that every past moment tends to filter into this present moment. And when it filters into this present moment, we're always carrying so much we can't let go. We don't understand this pati nisaga, the way to end craving, the renouncing. We have to renounce. And one of the best things to renounce is the past and all the judgments of the past. Simply let go of all of that. And you have this moment now. Don't judge it. I know Mahayanists said this moment has Buddha nature. So every person has Buddha nature. There's a Buddha in there. So you can't abuse a person. You can't call anybody names. It's like calling the Buddha a bad name. And that's Mahayana, but, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. In the simile which I developed of the thousand petal lotus, an understanding that whatever experience of this moment, whatever five khanda manifestation it is, whether it's your five khanda or someone else's five khandas, that if you can only open that out, allow it to unfold, you'll find right in the center of this, whatever this is, lies the deep meditations, the jhanas, the arupa states, and nibbana itself. And the whole practice towards enlightenment, the whole Eightfold Path is in going inwards into this moment, into this experience. And that's a practice which I have done long enough now to know that as me, so you, there's no difference. On the outside, when the lotus first starts to practice opening up, there's this really coarse and dirty, grubby outer petal. And it has to be like that because it takes the wind and the dirt. But you know that inside every beautiful lotus is these very delicate and wonderful petals. So when I look at each one of you, you're just like little lotuses. Some of you are well opened, and it's very beautiful and fragrant what I see. Some of you are dirty and rugged on the outside, but it doesn't matter, I know it's in there. Just need to open up a bit more. That means you respect every lotus. You respect every moment. And every manifestation of the five khandhas. You know, inside is incredible jhanas. And using that, it means nothing gets rejected or judged. Everything becomes useful. Every moment, every experience. If I'm sitting and I'm in pain, I'm sitting and I'm tired, I can use any of that. What I need to do is to be with it, not to judge and reject it. Allowing it to be, embracing, being with, not interfering, but just being with. And it just opens up. It's incredible to watch and to observe that process. You're there with the most unlikely situation, the conditions which you think can never lead to any deep meditation. And you let them go. So many people have come up and said that when nimittas came or jhana first arrived, it came out of the blue. I never expected it to happen. One of the things they're saying is that what they experienced was coming from the most unlikely starting point. This is what happens. Because every starting point, every situation, every mind moment contains, as it were, nibbana in its center, like the thousand petal lotus. Instead of rejecting, all we need to do is to be with and stay put, not judging, not moving. If you do it properly, without agitation, the whole thing starts to open. It's the way to enlightenment. All moving creates a world, creates a samsara, and that is suffering. Stillness dissolves a world, and that's the path to liberation and ultimate happiness. In stillness, things disappear. All the old baggage from the past, all the bad memories, all the revenge, resentment, or whatever else, vanishes. You find you don't have to settle scores. You don't have to do anything to solve the problem. You just need to be still for a change, to let it go, not to carry the past into the present. When you do that, the mind is still. The world vanishes. When you're still, the external world disappears. The walls of your hut, people outside, Perth, Australia, planet Earth, the whole universe just vanishes in stillness. Because the physical world needs movement to exist. In stillness, nothing can be perceived. In fact, you should know that the senses, the five senses, and even the sixth sense as well, it's wired to see change. Sound is there all the time. You can't know it. Feeling is always there. It disappears. Even a smell, after a while you can't smell it any longer. The mind only knows what changes. So when you close your eyes, you first see blackness. After a while, it disappears. The body, you can feel hot or cold. After a while, if it doesn't change, you can't feel it anymore. If you don't move your posture, with no movement, no change, it vanishes. Sounds can be the flutter of the heater. After a while, you don't notice it anymore. When the time doesn't change, because you're always in the present moment, you don't go off into the past or the future, time disappears. When you don't think of other monks, they're not a problem anymore. They disappear. When you don't think of time, time disappears. You don't think of the five senses. Everything is still, they disappear. When the body disappears, nimittas just arise. They don't arise because you make them arise. They arise because you've let go. And not judging is a way of letting go. The way of stopping controlling. You have to have something to do. Some good, bad, some destination. Something to improve. Ajahn Sumedho once said this beautiful saying, if you can't improve the silence, shut up. It's great, isn't it? Because very often you can't improve upon silence. So if you can't improve upon the silence, be quiet. If you can't improve upon stillness, don't move. Understanding this, you go very, very deep. When I say this is good enough, it's more than good enough. You can't improve upon this. Every time you try to, you make it worse. So you completely let go, abandon, renounce, give up. You can do that by not judging. And by not judging, good or bad, there's nothing to do. Stillness happens. And because of stillness, your lotus opens up. Opens up more and more. You get to the heart of things. The emptiness inside the lotus. It's an amazing thing to see happen. All this solid stuff you thought was real. The coarseness which we begin with. This is my friend, this is my enemy. He said this, he did that. That's just so coarse. It's too solid. When you go to the center of things, things are so delicate and fragrant. There's hardly anything there. Past and future is so coarse. Thought is so coarse. When you go to the center, you see these beautiful petals, which are so more lovely and so more real. You're allowing samsara to vanish, to fade away. It's called viraga, the fading away of the world. With the fading away of the world, this person, that person, past, future, good, bad, heat and cold, you come closer to where there is no heat, no cold. There is no high, no low. There is no far, no near. There is no enemy. There is no friend. There is no coarse speech. There is no fine speech. There's nothing is left. This is what happens. You go in to that lotus. The petals get more thin. There's less to them. They become gossamer. Hardly there at all. Like ghost petals. Like phantoms. This is what we mean by the jhanas and by the arupa states. There's nothing much left there. That's why sometimes at first when one touches these states, you don't know what they are. They're so delicate and refined. You have to have many experiences of them to actually really know exactly what they are. And the deeper you go, the less there is to see. The less there is to put a label on. You can understand why at the last arupa state you called it something like neither perception nor non-perception. It's almost impossible to pin down it's that thin and that close to nothing, freedom, emptiness, gone. So you understand what's at the heart of the lotus. The closer you go, the closer you go to emptiness, to nothingness, to freedom, to what's at the heart of all things. Ajahn Chah used to say, Wang, empty, nothing there. Just like the vacant hole. Nothing filling it in. Nothing there. This is what is at the center of all experience. It's anatta, the essence-less. Atta is an essence, not just a self, but nothing there at all. You go closer and closer to that until you see it. And then you come back afterwards, you understand the truth of all those things. There's nobody here. How can you get angry at this person or that person? Well, you get angry at. You just get angry at a process. You might as well get angry at a mountain. Or angry at a traffic light. What are you trying to get anyway? What are you trying to attain? Well, you're just trying to attain, there's nothing in it. You just, instead of attaining things, you let go. Ajahn Chah once said, we don't practice to attain things. We practice to abandon things, to let go of things. So anyone's into attainments, like, as I said, the old scout badges I used to get as a kid, it's not getting more scout badges. You get your jhana badge, your first jhana badge, your second jhana badge, and see how many badges you can get and compare your badges with the next monk. There's nothing to do with that at all. It's just to see how much you can abandon. See how much you can vanish and disappear. That's why the monks who are the most impressive are the monks you don't see. The monks who make no noise, who leave no footprints on the rains retreat. To the end of the range retreat, when I think of what happened, I don't think of you. You just weren't there. You just came, you ate, you went back and meditated. Silent, not making a noise, not leaving a footprint on the ground. Those are the monks who are getting close. the ones who leave no trace. So this is the path of using insight to develop freedom. It starts by developing peace and harmony in a monastery. It keeps the precepts so easily. It goes on by abandoning all the baggage from the past. My goodness, some people carry so much. And it limits them. It's a prison. And we can let it go. Any moment, you can just let it go if you have the guts and courage to do so. It's called forgiveness. It's called freedom. And then you just do that in your meditation. You don't judge. You don't judge your body. It's just a body being a body. Fellow monks is monks being monks. Candors being candors. Mosquitoes being mosquitoes. Time being time. You let it all go. And the whole thing vanishes and disappears. You're free. And that's your goal. Don't know how many weeks there are left now of the retreat, but there's plenty of time. Plenty of time, even the next moment, you can be free. If you can only have the courage to completely abandon and let go. And not judging, even for a moment, is one beautiful way. If you're going to judge at all, judge positively. But give others the benefit of the doubt. Give you the benefit of the doubt. Give the body the benefit of the doubt. But rather, better than that, is not to judge, even a moment. No preference, to the point where the doer just cannot have a place to stand on. And the whole thing opens up, and jhanas are easy. So that's the talk for this evening.
So I cut off.